Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. No matter where you are in the world today, welcome to the Gotcha Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt. And in the studio with me today is Damien Huxham. So, Damien, would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yes, hi everyone. My name is Damien Huxham. I'm the One Nation candidate for the federal electorate of Hinkla in Queensland, which covers pretty much from Bundaberg in the north down to Hervey Bay in the south, and a lot of towns in between.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about how you got into politics, Damien.
It's actually quite a funny story, this one. I am not a career politician. I work out in the mining industry as a heavy plant operator, and we were sitting around discussing politics a little while ago in the crib hut, and it really got on my nerve with what, you know, some of the guys were saying. And we all replicated a very similar story that we're sick of the way the country's headed. It seems to be two companies running the place, and you know, things are going bad for the country. And I just thought, look, I want to make a difference. I want to stand up and just, I'm only a normal bloke, but I want to have a go and see what changes I can bring about, because I have a bit of life experience. And that's pretty much how it got involved. One Nation is probably one of the only parties that I can actually relate to, you know, in their policies and just being a party for the people.
Oh, that's fantastic, mate. It's a shame you didn't come across Restore Australia first. But look, I was a member of One Nation as well. I ran for them in the last election, so I think we've made a very good choice.
Yep, ta.
Yeah. I've met Pauline too. Have you met her yet?
Oh, yes. This all came about, that little story I just told you, about 11 days before the state election that we had last year. And I shot One Nation an email, they shot me one back, and they said, we'd be interested to meet with you. I met with Pauline the following day, we had a chat. She said, I'd actually like to run you because you're just a real person. So we filled out the electoral forms, and then I came home and told my wife, and I had 9 days of campaigning. I'd never done anything like it in my life. So it was quite an interesting experience, and for the 9 days we polled just on 7% of the primary vote, which the first time up was absolutely it was just amazing the support I received. Yes, being a right wing sort of a party, you know, in the general consensus of things, a lot of people had a lot of things to say about it, but the support and feedback I got from a lot of people was quite overwhelming for a person who hasn't lived a public life.
Yeah, it's also very grueling, isn't it? I mean, my first campaign, I swore I was never going to do this again, and yet here I am back at the polling, you know. But like you, I just couldn't sit back and see what the major parties are doing to our country. So good on you. I'm glad to have you aboard, and we need more people like you, mate.
I've got a lot of friends interested in it, but they're just not willing to take that next step, which I think everyone reaches a point in time where they just say, enough is enough, I'm fed up, and I want to try and be the difference that we need.
Yeah, I agree. And my boiling point came when Rudd was stabbed in the back by Gillard, because I lived in Thailand for 30 years, and I lived through 5 coups up there, so I know what a coup looks like. And boy, oh boy, was that a coup.
Yes.
And then now with Turncoat stabbing Tony in the back, what has gone wrong with our country?
That's exactly the way I feel. I wasn't a fan of Kevin Rudd, but I definitely wasn't a fan of Julia Gillard after that happened. No. And then I sat there, it was a couple of months ago when the Abbott Turnbull one happened, and it was the same circus, but it was different clowns. And enough is enough. You know, you've got Obama who's got the whole collection of prime ministers since he's been in.
Yeah.
I think it's just terrible. These are elected representatives carrying on like Lord of the Flies. It's abhorrent, and I can't. It gets me worked up actually.
I can hear that
in
your voice.
Probably too much.
Look, that's what we need in politics. We need people with passion who are ready to get out there and fight for the people, because we've had enough of this party politics. And I think it's time that we had ordinary guys stand up and say, I'm ready to serve my country. Talking of which, do you have any military background?
No, I don't have military background. The closest thing to military I have is my grandfather served in World War II, and I was a member of the Boy Scouts. So, no, I don't have the experience, but not in a military background at all, no.
Well, I didn't serve in World War II. I'm not that old, but I was in the Boy Scouts, and I did serve in Vietnam, or the Vietnam War. But, look, it's just great to have you on board. Tell me, now that you've joined up with One Nation, can you tell us a little bit about what you expect to do with them?
Well, at this point in time, I'm the only candidate that has been endorsed from the state level through to the federal level.
Right.
I absolutely admire Pauline for what has happened to her and how she has still wanting to fight for the right things.
Mm.
And there is a general stereotype with One Nation.
Oh, yeah.
However, if you do read the policies, it sort of makes up your mind that it's not really all about what people think and the general assumption that people have,
yeah.
Which is what we really need, because I think we're long past the duopoly, the Labor-Liberal, the blue, the red. I think we're long past that now. We need to have a good look at ourselves, have a good look at the direction of the country, and we need to make drastic changes. We've gone from a self-sufficient country to a country that's signing trade agreements and us heavily relying on them, bringing in unskilled workers when this region in particular is the second highest unemployment area in Queensland. Mm. The figures are heavily massaged to not reflect that, but they are heavily massaged, and it's just, we really need to look at ourselves and bring a bit of industry back. We're the last generation of people that can say we bought a car manufactured in Australia. All our white goods are getting done overseas. It's heartbreaking. I don't want to be the generation that didn't do anything.
I agree. Have you spoken to Pauline about how you... let's assume here that you get elected. What would be the first thing you'd want to do in Parliament?
Oh, I'd like to have a good look at everything. As I said earlier, I'm not a career politician, so I don't know how, you know, everything works. It'll be a big, steep learning curve for me. But I want to. We have our policies that we work from. But ideally, the suggestions and issues I take to the Parliament would be from the people. I see too many politicians win the seat, forget the people, and then you don't see them until it's election time again, when they're out kissing hands and shaking hands and kissing babies. You just see too much of it. I want to be a representative that's out and about talking to people and getting people's ideas, because after all, the people are who you represent, and if you aren't doing the right thing by them, then realistically you shouldn't be there.
Exactly, one of the things that I will do if I'm elected is I would come back to Queensland, try and get back here at least once a month, and just travel around and meet people. You know, we'll call a town hall meeting somewhere and get the people to come along and talk to me and tell me what they want, tell me how things are going, what their concerns are. And you don't see that from this current crop of politicians. They just don't care. They live in their own world, flying around in public paid helicopters. And who the hell do these people think they are?
That's exactly right. You compare the Julie Bishop $30,000 plane charter, and you've got elderly pensioners surviving on that for a year. And that, to me, they've forgotten their grassroots, they've forgotten where they belong, they've forgotten who they represent, they just get their snout in the trough, and that's the end of them.
Well, I don't think they've actually forgotten. Because they belong to these large parties, they are told how to behave and what to do. And, of course, some of them take more advantage of it than others. But the fact is, that's what parties do. They use our money because they think it's theirs. they think that they run the country. Well, I'm sorry, they're in for a big shock at this next election. From what I'm talking, hearing from people, a lot of people have had enough. They want to see a dramatic change to our electoral system. I'd like to talk to you again later on, on the phone. We had a very interesting discussion there the other day when we were discussing coming on the radio show. And maybe you should have a look at our policies too, because actually you'll find that they're very similar to One Nation's. We come from the same basic stock, really. My mother actually worked for One Nation before she retired. So I come from a... Well, when I say she helped campaigns and stuff like that. But it was quite funny because when I was running, I met Peter Wise, who was one of the founding... I think he's one of the founding members of One Nation. Lovely old guy. And he said, "Holt, do you know Sylvia Holt?" And I said, "Yeah, that's my mother." He said, "Oh, you come from good stock then." I think you'll do great, mate. You've got the passion there. I can hear it in your voice. You've got you've got the will to go in there and make something. And if we're both elected, I really look forward to working with you.
Absolutely. That's what I said. At the moment, we all see the council elections going on, and I like to make myself known to a lot of the council candidates. There's a lot of newcomers in there. There's a lot of incumbents that are running again. And we have a piece of infrastructure which I'll have a chat to you about later on, and I would like to see support from all levels, because at the end of the day, it's going to benefit us all. So we really all need to work together, irrelevant of what side of politics you're on at the local level.
Okay, that brings up an interesting point before we listen to a song. I very often hear or see people on Facebook saying, "Oh, why don't all these small parties unite and form one big one?" But that would be self-defeating for a couple of very good reasons. One is that many of these minor parties all support citizens-initiated referendums, which we'll talk about after the music, I think. But also, every election there are 6 Senate seats up for grabs, and right now we only have 4 Senate candidates from the minor parties running in Queensland. Is myself, Kim Booger, Jim Savage, and Pauline, of course.
Yes.
So we need 2 more, and actually we need more than that if we can, so that we can fill up those 6 seats with all minor party or independent candidates.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, and what a lot of people don't understand is that the minor party leaders are all talking to each other. Not a great deal at this stage, but... There goes my phone. but as we get closer to the election, I have somebody who will be negotiating my preferences for me. He's a very experienced preference negotiator. And... All the minor parties will be discussing this, and we will not give our preferences to the majors at all. We'll swap the preferences among ourselves and keep the majors out.
Yes. Something that rang true in my ear when I ran in the state election, we were at a Meet the Candidates night, and everyone was up there, and I thought, like, I ran a clean campaign. I didn't have any dirt because I haven't been in the game long enough. So I got up and said what I was about, and then sat down after I said my piece, and then I watched the Labor candidate stand up, and he really started attacking the LNP lady. And then when he finished, he turned around and he said, "If you don't want to vote me, for God's sake, vote for the LNP so we don't have the trouble we have with the minor parties at the moment." And that really shocked me. Yeah. That really, really shocked me.
Yeah,
after he just...
Amazing.
2 minutes bagging her out, he turns around and he does that, and I just really thought, this is not right. It's not right.
No.
And then once he got elected, a few things have happened since, but nothing major. And the other independent who ran at the time was Chris Foley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was approached by both major parties when they realised it could possibly well be a hung parliament, And they said, give us a shopping list of all the things that you want for the area, which included a lot of things, pathology for the hospital in Maryborough and so forth. He had a list of 29 things, and they would have happily have guaranteed them for him to give them their support to form government. I gave him my preferences, but he just got pipped, and then it totally came down to preferences. So the LNP were actually in front by a reasonable amount, but the preferences saw Labor take the seat.
Yeah, that's the problem with preferences. And it is. Because they have this system in place and they can dictate to us, they expect us to kowtow. And that brings me to the first song in the show, Kowtow by Mick Jagger.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Gotcha Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt. And in the studio with me today, I've got Damien, who's standing for One Nation up around the Bundaberg area. So, Damien, before the song, we were talking about your motivation. What else do you plan to do if you're elected?
I'd like to see, one of the policies we have is the citizens-initiated referendum. I think that's a very, very, very important part of Australian culture. The just giving power back to the people. At the moment, like your plebiscites and your petitions, I have a petition at the moment in with the state government, but they're not enforceable. I would like to see a lot more power being brought back to the people. Obviously, it's going to scare the majors, but that's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, actually, you brought up a good point there. It does scare the majors. When I was actually in the Liberal Party for a little while because I wanted to find out what they were up to. So I joined the party and sat in on the party meetings in Budrum. And whenever I brought up CIR, you should have seen the looks on their faces. Some of them, one of the, I think the president, the Queensland president, said to me, in essence, yes, we agree, but you'd have to go through the your local party room first and get their agreement, and then it has to go up the line. And this is the problem with the big parties, you see. It all has to go through a process which, in the end, defeats anybody who tries to stand up and do something good. Now, yes. You mentioned, too, that the CIR has to be binding on the government. This is a very important point that you brought up, because in New Zealand, for example, they're not binding. So they have these referendums, which is a stupid thing to do, and then the government just shrugs and says, so what? We don't care. No, it must be binding on the government. So
it has to be. I'd like to see. I don't know the ins and outs of it as to what would trigger, what volume of signatures or so forth would trigger a referendum on it, or on the very start was introduced.
Okay, well, at the moment it's supposed to be 1% of the population signing a petition will trigger a referendum, but we, as we know, many, many organisations have got many more signatures than that. The worst one I heard of, somebody submitted a petition with over 1 million signatures, and it didn't even get past the first stage in Parliament. It was just bin. So the whole system is not accepting referendums. It's not allowing the people to have a voice because the party don't want it. So let's talk a little bit about how a referendum works and what we could do with it. Well, you tell us first what you know. Maybe I can add to that.
Yeah, well, as it stands at the moment, the voice of the people isn't getting heard. So the referendums, to me, like, they're great along the lines of petitioning, but it's not enforceable. You can, like you were just saying, you heard of 1 million people that had signed it. To me, that obviously warrants investigation. It obviously warrants a bit of
respect.
Absolutely it does. Absolutely, and that's what it's all about. It's about respecting people.
Yeah.
We should be putting us first, and obviously, if there's a topic or something that's of concern enough to warrant that many people to sign a petition, then realistically, it should be looked at.
That's right. It should be looked at. In fact, it must be looked at. This is one of the things that we should all be working towards once we get into Parliament, is to push this through. Now, people have asked me, well, you know, if the government or the parliament won't accept your petition or won't accept your bill, because we already have a bill written. And I'll tell you a little bit about how that happened. I worked with a chap called Lieutenant Colonel Charles Mollison, and he spent many years writing a draft constitution. It was he that inspired me to get involved in all of the politics, etc. And after I read his draft constitution, I could see that this was a very good way to reform the political system and bring about a healthy, wealthy and happy nation. And he worked with Senator John Madigan just after the last election, I think it was, to submit a bill to amend Section 128 of the Constitution to put the power in our hands to initiate referendums. So the problem is, at the moment, only the politicians could start a referendum. So we have to take a petition to Parliament, and then one of the politicians has to submit a bill, and of course to do that, he is supposed to consult with the people. And once it gets the bill gets before Parliament, it should be voted on, and then they would then amend the Constitution to put the power in our hands. That is not happening. So we now have to work out how we're going to do this. So with this bill that we've written, we actually took the rejected bill from Senator Madigan, and Charles rewrote the whole thing according to the suggestions given to the, John for amendments that would make it possible for the Parliament to actually consider it. To be honest with you, Madigan's bill was not very well written. It wasn't wide-ranging enough, and it certainly didn't put enough power into the hands of the people. I think he was trying to go slowly. But this is something that's become so important with the Islamic problem that we can no longer afford to go slowly. So when we get into Parliament, that bill is ready to submit. Now, if the Parliament refuses to accept it, I'd like to suggest that you and I unite, and either any other senators that are in there that agree with our goals, and we call a press conference that will go out all over Australia, and we tell the Australian people what is going on. It's up to the people to decide this. And if the people make a loud enough outcry, then the government is going to have to listen. The problem is that all these bills that have been put forward to Parliament before to bring in citizens-initiated referendums have failed because the people who put the bills in didn't follow up like this. They didn't mobilise the people. And if we're going to have CIR, it has to come from the people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, tell me a little bit about CIR itself. What do you know about the concept and how it would work?
Well, basically, I just have my version that ideally the ultimate power will be going back to the people. And, right. and the people are the ones that have the ideas. The people are out there dealing with life day to day. I think a lot of politicians get stuck in a little glass bubble and they don't see what's going on around them. Mm. There's a lot of people struggling in a lot of different industries across the country, be it farming, be it anything. And ideally, we need to have the power back into their hands.
Right. I think the once we have the CIR, do you have any idea on what would be the first referendum we should bring in?
Well, I think one of the first things that is really of interest to myself is well, there's there's quite a couple up there. Refugees is high on my board. Foreign ownership is another one that's very high up on my list as well. And it just makes you upset when you look at what's going on. We haven't got a say in everything. I mean, it's charitable to look after refugees. I think it's charitable, but I really think we really need to clean our own backyard up first before we start looking at things like this. And yeah, it's just upsetting. It's just upsetting a lot of the time that we aren't given a say in this. We, you know, I mean, if Labor were in, we would have had twice the amount brought in.
Okay, well, here's a suggestion, because while they're laudable goals, they're not really going to reform the system. What we need to do first is to reform the system, the government system, and the only way we can do that is to reform the electoral system first. And my idea, taken from the draft constitution, is that we resize all the electorates down to 5,000 voters. Then we form a region of 50 electorates. So that would be 250,000 people per region. And in each electorate, we vote one person in to represent us in the regional government. So we would have 50 electorates in the regional government, and they would utilise the resources that are currently being used by the local councils. So we'd get all the bureaucrats and the and the workers in the council, and they would become workers and bureaucrats for the regional government. So they would execute the laws and rulings of the regional parliament. Now, from the regional parliament, we can either elect one from one of their representatives from the regional parliament to go to federal parliament to represent that region, or we elect one more person from the 50 electorates to go to the federal parliament to represent that region. Right. Now, we would have about 100 regions throughout Australia, and therefore we would only have 100 representatives in parliament. How many are there in there right now, including the Senate?
Oh, isn't it mind-boggling?
It is. It's about 350 people, maybe more.
It's too many. It is.
And this is one of the reasons why our government has become unwieldy. We've got too many people in there, and most of them are doing nothing. So I think with a smaller, tighter government like that, with representatives from the people, because this system will eliminate the parties. There'll be no need for it. And it will also eliminate the need for states. The only reason you keep the states now is for the footy. So...
I do like my footy.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got to keep that. But the fact is, under the new government system, this is all we would need. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I think, actually, it doesn't sound like a bad idea. Doesn't sound like a bad idea. There's a lot of ideas out there that a lot of good people don't get to put forward because people don't want to listen to them.
Well, that's a big problem, of course, because people have become apathetic after all. Who is going to get excited about this government system when we have no voice?
Yes, exactly right.
If we did that, then we could really start to reform how our country works, because the politicians would be directly accountable to the people, and the regional governments would be responsible for providing all the services that the local councils now provide. So your roads, your hospitals, your jails, your courts, et cetera, would all be run by the regional government. And then all of the regions, you could travel from one region in the east of Australia right over to the west, and you would get the same services in every region. So it wouldn't matter where you go. You can move around, no problem. You know that you'd get exactly the same services. And this would include things like education. I think education for our kids has been completely dumbed down because of this socialist rubbish.
Yes.
This system would give us the opportunity to provide decent education for our kids across all regions across Australia.
Mm.
Have you read the One Nation policy on CIR?
Yes, and I do prefer my easier version. Yes, I have read it. I don't know it exactly word for word.
Yeah, I haven't read it for a long time, so can you remind me what it says, or is that too much of an ask?
I'd have to call it up.
All right, but it might be a good idea for us all to read it, because I know that their policy is excellent. And their policies were formulated over a number of years by some very brilliant people. So,
absolutely, but you know, it's realistically, it's just common sense. It's just common sense. That's probably one of the easiest way to put it, and fair.
Well, that's exactly it. You hit it in a nutshell. Common sense. That's exactly what's also enshrined in the draft constitution that I keep referring to. I use that as the basis for my thoughts and policies, etc. Because that draft, even though we may never actually bring in that whole draft constitution, it does serve as a very good reference source for me and for others,
yes,
and gives you some very good ideas. And they're all just, as you say, common sense.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, look, it's time for the Quran reading. So let's have a listen to me reading out the Quran, because then I dissect it a bit so we can all understand what it says.
Each week, we read a verse or two from the Quran to examine what it says and understand why Islam is doing what it is doing today right around the world. Today we're going to read two surahs or verses from the Quran, and they will help us understand what Islam has always done from the day that Muhammad stalked the earth. In Surah 8, 57, it states, "If thou comest on them in the war, deal with them so as to strike fear in those who are behind them, that haply they may remember. And that is not happily, but haply, H-A-P-L-Y. In other words, if you go to war with them, which is very common for Islam, it is a warlike ideology, then fight to strike fear in everybody so that they remember the next time and surrender and become Islamic. Now in Surah 867, it states, it is not for a prophet that he should have prisoners of war until he had made a great slaughter in the land. This explains what Muhammad was all about. He was not a prophet, as you and I understand from the Bible. He was a warmonger, a warlord, and he would not take prisoners until he had killed hundreds or even thousands of people. And the idea of this was to strike terror into those that he made war on so that they would easily surrender and become Islamic or be slaughtered. This has been Islam throughout the ages for 1,400 years. Isn't it time that we put a stop to Islam? It must be eliminated from the planet.
Welcome back to the Gotcha Radio Show with your host Mike Holt and Davian, who is standing for One Nation up in the Bundaberg. What do you call your region?
It's the it's Fraser Coast Bundaberg region. It's the Hinkler Electorate.
Hinkler Electorate. Okay, so if you're listening up there in the Hinkler Electorate, I hope you like what Damien has to say, because he's chosen a very good party to run with, and he's got some great ideas. I think you have some pretty strong ideas too about the halal scam, right?
The halal rort, absolutely, yes. It's a bit of a sore topic with a lot of people that Australians have had this rammed down their throats. We're being forced to buy it, and I don't think it's acceptable.
No. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is? Because some of the listeners may not even know what it is.
It's, in my words, it is just a money-making rort. It has been around for a while. I think it kicked off in the 80s, so it's not unfamiliar with a lot of people, but it just seems, of late, everyone's jumping on it. It's very hard not to buy something that's not halal certified.
Yeah, well, until about 3 or 4 years ago, I'd never even heard of halal, and I've lived in Islamic countries. So it's not the norm. Well, it wasn't the norm over there. I went to high school in Penang in Malaysia. There was no mention of halal ever. Nobody even thought about it. If the Muslims living up there ever needed halal, they just lived in private at home.
That was exactly right, and that's... A lot of people fail to understand that prior to this halal certification, the Islamic people did eat by simply saying a prayer over their food to make it halal certified.
Yeah.
That's really it. And now it's just turned into a money-making racket. That's all it has, and everybody is being forced to pay it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Seeing things, plastic bags. Even in the States, there's halal certified whiskey, which is absolutely beyond my comprehension.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But, you know, anything to make a buck out of the infidel. But, you know, when I came back to Australia, I think in 2009, nobody was talking about this. They didn't even know it existed. And as you say, it's been going since the 1980s. And we've been gradually being forced to pay the halal fee on more and more of our goods and services. Until now, almost everything in the supermarket is halal certified. I actually go around the supermarkets and talk to the supermarket workers, and I ask them, is this halal certified? Oh, I don't know. Should be on the packet. No, because they hide it. And they look at me in astonishment. You know, really? So, you know, this is one way we can raise awareness.
Yes, well, there is a couple of websites that are quite interesting on, and there's a lot of Facebook groups too, like the Halal Choices.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite interesting. I have an app on my phone, which is, it's called BuyCop, and it's an app that you can scan a barcode and it can tell you if the product is halal certified or not. But I mean, that takes updating regularly. But you can pretty much guarantee the majority of items placed conveniently in shopping centres are halal certified.
Mm-hmm.
I generally shop at IGA where I'm working. I have to cook for myself, so I prefer to support IGA, the smaller guys.
Mm-hmm.
I also, where possible, grab anything Dick Smith's.
Mm-hmm. Good. Have you visited our website, islamforinfidels.com?
I was trying to find that the other night. I had a bit of drama. We've had a few storms out where I work, and my service has been bad on my phone at night. But I am going to do a bit more research into a lot of stuff, actually. I've got to read those policies you sent me as well.
Okay, well, on islamforinfidels.com, that's with the number 4 in the middle of Islam for Infidels, we have one main menu tab called Halal. And on there we have quite a lot of information. One of the articles talks about the halal scam supporting terrorism, and we present a lot of evidence that if our government servants were, you know, keen enough to follow through, they would easily find the links between halal and terrorism. It's all there. They have to do is look.
Yes. If being the operable word there, I think they get to a point where they don't want to place themselves in a position to be able to cop criticism from anyone, so they just leave it. I mean, obviously we can't ban it. But one of the things I'd like to see, a government-regulated body that is in control of it. I want to see transparency. I'd like the system to be auditable so we can actually see where the money's going. Because it's, you know, in France, roughly, I think it's $7 billion per annum. That's what the halal food market's worth in France.
Well, it's about $3 billion here, but I'm going to disagree with you on that.
Yeah.
I don't want halal in Australia full. I don't want the government involved in halal. I don't want halal on our shelves. I don't want to even hear the word halal in Australia because it is not Australian. It is an Islamic.
Well, I agree with you on that.
So if we get into Parliament, one of the things that I will be working on is actually banning the Quran, because the Quran is no better than Mein Kampf. In fact, it's probably a lot worse. And we don't have Mein Kampf in Australia, although it's not illegal to buy it. But countries like Austria, and I can't remember the other countries in Europe, it is actually banned because it is a terrorist training manual. And we can do the same thing with the Quran here because it is a terrorist training manual. And if you ban the Quran, Islam ceases to exist in Australia because they can't do anything without it. So then we give the Muslims a choice. Leave Islam or leave Australia, because Islam is not compatible with Australia. Now, if we want to sell products to Islamic countries, then that's fine. We'll sell them the products and they can darn well come over here and certify them themselves and pay for the certification themselves. But it's got nothing to do with our government and nothing to do with Australians. Let them do it themselves. Well, they want halal, let them pay for it.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that upsets me, it's coming up to Easter time now I buy Lindt now. I have bought Lindt for a couple of years, but we have Cadbury. Cadbury are putting out Easter eggs, which is a Christian celebration, that are halal certified.
I know, how ridiculous is that?
And to me, it doesn't seem right. Well, it's not right.
No, it's sick. And I think it shows a terrible disregard for our sensibilities and our religion and our culture. And it's just plain greed on the part of these companies. Well, you know, Cadbury's has been popping a lot of flack over the last couple of years, and I've been leading a few things against them. So that last Christmas, not this last one, but the one before, they actually had to close down their factory in Tasmania for 5 weeks because there wasn't enough sales to maintain the factory. So they're taking a real financial hit, and yet they still haven't woken up to the fact that all they have to do is stop certifying halal and we'll go back to their chocolate, maybe. Because as you're finding out, their chocolate actually tastes better.
Yes, I do like it. I do miss the odd Cadbury splurge every now and then.
Well, if you want good chocolate like that, go to Aldi. And they have I forget the name of it offhand, but they've got very thick, big chocolate blocks in there that are better than Cadbury's.
Wow, I'll have to try.
Yeah. Now, one of the things Restore Australia has done, we printed out or red stickers, and we still do, we still sell them, which say, beware, halal food funds terrorists.
Yes.
And people buy those little stickers and stick them everywhere. This is a great way to raise awareness.
I am aware of that, and I have seen some of them around, and I do have a little chuckle every time I see them.
Yeah, we also do the Ban Islam stickers. So, Restore Australia has been at the forefront of fighting against halal, and we work with other anti-halal groups as well, and we exchange information, we support each other's efforts. But, you know, that little sticker has really woken a lot of people up. During the last election, a young lady in Brisbane got arrested for sticking one on a jar of coffee. Well, sales of that sticker went through the roof as a result. People everywhere were buying them. I was sending out foot thick stacks of stickers.
Yeah.
So, but it just goes to show that those little stickers can make such a big impact. Now, another thing that I did was I set up a group called the Restore Australia Street Reps, and people sign up. And I would send them a stack of leaflets about the halal scam, and they just go up and down their street and put the leaflets in letterboxes at night or whatever, and that's it. That's all they had to do. And yet those flyers got such a big reception all over Australia. I printed out 120,000 flyers so far. I'm printing out another 20,000 flyers right now to advertise my campaign, but that's a different story. But, you know, letterbox dropping of flyers is a great way to get the word out there. We also supply the text for letters to be sent to companies, written in such a way that, you know, the companies just couldn't really come back without sounding like, you know, accusing us of being racist in most cases. Well, that didn't win them any friends.
No, it won't. It won't.
No. So, you know, they're in denial because they know they're wrong. They're paying this ridiculous fee. And they're in denial for it. So, the hell with them, we don't support those companies. The one company we do support is Mulaney Milk.
Yes, I
love Mulaney Milk because after they came out with that statement that we do not pay the halal fee, they actually put the little Christian fish on their labelling.
Yes.
I thought that was great because the Muslims have their halal stickers. We have our little Christian fish.
Yes, it's very good, isn't it? Someone actually said that to me the other night, that there should be a Christian certification mob throughout Australia. I said to them, gee, wouldn't the minority make a hell of a racket at that?
Yeah.
They carry on.
I know, they carry on about that, but they don't complain about halal. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm glad to hear that you're against the halal certification law. And,
absolutely.
Please keep spreading the word, and if you need any help or you need any stickers or flyers or anything at all, you let me know, because we can always supply them for you.
Yeah, I think, and that's the thing with it. I think that with this halal rule, the Australians are easygoing, and we have a she'll be right, mate attitude. And when it's brought up, when I'm chatting with, you know, guys at work and stuff, they are at a loss to understand how big this halal rort actually is, and a lot of them weren't even aware of everything, you know, weren't even aware of the nuts and bolts of it and how it's infiltrated almost every item on the mainstream supermarket shelves.
Well, go to Islam for Infidels and show them the articles on halal, because it will follow their minds. The one on halal certification does support terrorists or something. It shows there what $2.8 trillion looks like in big stacks of dollars. And it's mind-boggling. And
absolutely.
That was the total value of the halal market last year around the world, $2.8 trillion. It's estimated this year it will go up to $5 trillion.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's coming from the Malaysian Halal Authority. So it's pretty frightening. But show them our website. Get them interested, get them talking, and get them getting in touch with us so that we can help educate them some more. And let's get them buying the stickers, because those stickers help fund all our work. So the more stickers we have, the more work we can do.
Yeah.
Sorry about advertising on your show. But
That's all right. I'm on your show.
All right, Damien.
I can't argue with you, Arnold. I do agree with pretty much everything there.
Good. Well, I think it's time for a little bit of fun, since we're having a bit of a laugh. Let's listen to Mighty Mo.
Mighty Mo!
Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Poor Fizzy Muggles. He lost his head the last time we were listening in. And Mighty Mo, true to his colours, just couldn't stand the mendacious, lying Muslim scumbag any longer. So he did what he always has. He lopped off his head. Hey, but wait. Who's that over there? Oh, great, angry, mighty Mo. It is I, Fizzy Muggles. What? Where did you come from? I thought I got rid of you.
Yes!
Oh, you did, oh, violent tyrant. But Allah is indeed pleased with me. He told me that he has more work for me to do on this planet. So he put my head back on, and here I am, just as good as I was before. But how? Oh, but Mighty Mo, it is so easy for our wonderful Lord and Protector, Allah. Just as he heals the hymens of the deflowered virgins overnight, he did the same for me. Oh, Allah, you have brought back this bane of my existence, and worse, you have made him into a right can't think of the word. Oh, woe is me. What am I going to do now? Oh, fear not, O great and mighty Mo. I have heard what you said. Allah has not only healed my head, he gave me a better head than before. Now I can hear a pin drop 2 kilometers away. And look at my tongue. I can lick my forehead, too.
Oh, Fizzy, Fizzy, we love you. Fizzy, Fizzy. Oh, come here, Fizzy.
Oh, now that the word has got out, I will probably never get a moment's peace.
You'd better come back with me to the table, Fizzy. Just as well you're back. That Foster Foskin is giving me a lot of trouble. I can't understand him half the time.
Hey, g'day there, Mighty Mo. Pull up a pew, mate.
What?
Park your bum. Cark your carcass. Take a seat.
Where should I take the seat? And how dare you tell me what to do, you filthy infidel?
Hey, Bluey, catch a whiff of this drongo, and he's got the cheek to call me filthy.
Listen, Mighty Mo, we aren't going to come to any arrangements by ignoring the niceties. Now let's sit down and discuss this trade agreement, eh? I'm all ears.
All ears?
Yeah, you know, I'm up for jumping in, balls and all.
Eh? Fizzy, what is this cretin saying?
Oh, my dim-dum protege, Mighty Mo. I do believe he is saying he's ready to listen to your proposal.
Oh, well, why didn't he say that then? Now listen here, you misbegotten infidel. We are ready to sell you a contract to supply you with an unlimited supply of our best dates.
Dates? Sounds like a plan, mate. I fancy dating a few of them there houris.
Oh, fool! I mean dates, those little fruit things that grow on our palm trees.
Ah, you mean those dates? Oh, yeah, well, we could probably take a few of them. Hey, I got a recipe me mum gave me. I love to make date rolls. I reckon me ocker mates back home would get into them too, eh, Bluey?
Yeah, mate. I reckon they would. Me girlfriend goes bananas every time you whip up a batch.
Fizzy, what are they saying?
Oh, my great and confused prophet of doom. I think they are saying that their friends back in Australia would like to eat some kind of confectionery that Foster Foreskin is proficient at making. Maybe we should get him to teach my second, is it my third wife, I'm a Sultana, to make this confectionery. You know what a sweet tooth I get after slaying a bunch of Jews. Oh, I shiver in anticipation, my brilliant mighty Mo. Hey, Mo, I've chucked a couple of shrimp on the barbie. Come on over here and tuck in, mate. Time to stop beating around the bush. We'll sign that contract over a can of barbed wire. Oh, Fizzy, what is this man talking about now? My poor head is aching. Oh, mighty Mo, if you think your head is aching, imagine how mine feels. It wouldn't be so bad having my head reattached, but you kick my poor head across the room, too. Oh, nice goal, by the way. Oh, shut up, Fizzy. What is that damn infidel trying to tell me? He said he's thrown some prawns on the cooking fire, and now it's time to eat. He said it's time to get down to business. He'll sign the contract over a can of 4X beer. That's why they call it barbed wire, because it looks like barbed wire. And there we'll leave our daring duo. We'll have to wait until next time to hear more adventures of
Mighty Mo!
This is the Gotcha Radio Show with your host Mike Holt, and in the studio with me today is Damien, who's running for One Nation. Damien, I'd like to touch on a subject now which I know is dear to your heart because you work up in the farm area. Farmer suicides and what's causing that.
Oh, it's, what can you say? It's pretty upsetting to see, you know, farmers committing suicide and walking off the land, banks, you know, coming in and seizing them and then just selling them off overseas. I'm in total agreement that not enough is being, we need to keep these farmers on the land. I think our current politicians are going about it the wrong way. We should be looking at ourselves as a fruit bowl of the world, supplying as much as we can. In China, for example, our food quality is, I think they label it green because it's one of the best qualities in the world. And, it just breaks my heart to see a lot of what's going on, especially the George Bender one. That was probably one of the most recent public incidents where a farmer's actually taken his life because they just can't, no one will listen to him, you know, and it breaks your heart, it really does.
Well, I posted an article there today on my Facebook page about the ANZ Bank sending in half a dozen police and the bank officials and just took the farm from this guy. Turfed him out on the street. This is treason.
Yes.
It should not be happening because our farmers are our lifeblood. If we don't have farmers, we don't eat. What are we supposed to do? Import Chinese rubbish?
Exactly right.
Now this, of course, is because we're losing our sovereignty due to Agenda 21 and the Lima Agreement and all these other things that are going on. The TPP Agreement, which was just recently signed by Julie Bishop, all of these things are destroying our sovereignty and our ability to govern ourselves. We are now vassal state of the UN. And this has got to stop. And one of the reasons that I am running is because I want to get the CIR in so that we can start taking back our country. That business I was telling you about before of reforming the electoral system would be the first step in getting back our sovereignty. So, what's One Nation's policy as far as helping the farmers out?
Well, as you said earlier, farmers are our lifeblood. We would like to support as many farmers as possible. Obviously, we've got a drought going on. Farmers go through a downturn, but there's also a good term for them as well. And I think in the downturn, we should be helping them out. Recently, Pauline did the Burrumbuddick hay run. obviously there was a media blackout on a lot of media coverage of her doing it, because there wasn't too many other politicians that I saw actually going on and doing it. And she had some really interesting footage of it, and I was very impressed. Brendan Farrell was actually one of my choices for Australian of the Year, but none of my choices actually got awarded. But I mean, there's a guy that is helping Australia and helping the farmers in a time of need, and it's really, it puts a smile on your face to see what he's done. It really, really does. And at the same time, then the UN wants some more money for Syria, so we go and give another $25 million to them. Just leave it up there.
Yeah. Why not help our farmers first?
Yes. Yes.
On a side issue here, what is Burram Buffett? Sounds a bit rude.
It leaves from down in New South Wales, and it runs 1,200 kilometres up to, and the name of the thing something, it slips my mind at the moment, but it's right in the centre there, and it runs right up. It's a fabulous. He's Brendan. I think he's done it about 10 times so far. He's only starting to really get the recognition now.
All right, so yes. Basically what he's doing is he's raising funds, buying hay, and shipping it up to the farmers here who are suffering badly from the drought. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so listeners, dig deep, and please go onto I think it's on Facebook, isn't it? The Burram Buffett Hay Run.
The Burram Buffett Hay Run, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, go and search for Burram Buffett Hay Run, and please donate whatever you can afford, because this is a very worthy cause. Let's keep our farmers on the land. Let's keep them safe, and let's keep their products and produce.
Absolutely.
In Australia.
A dollar here, a dollar there. I think a bale of hay is $6-$7, like the smaller ones. They take what they can carry, and I think I heard him say he's got around 120, 160 trucks organised, and they get a lot of fuel donated, but they still have to pay for a lot as well. And these guys are donating their trucks and their time. And doing this, and the people are coming out on the streets and waving flags, and it really makes you proud to be an Aussie to see the brilliance of these people. They're just exceptional people, and to me, you know, that guy in particular, Brendan Farrell, should have been awarded Australian of the Year. I really thought that the work he is doing is the epitome of being an Australian. I really do, and I was quite disappointed when. We saw who the Australians of the Year were, and he wasn't amongst them. Even the Drought Angels do a fantastic job. But yeah, that one rings true to me, because Lee went up and actually, she went on the run. She went on and she actually flew home. And she was quite tired when she got back. But it just puts a smile on your face and makes you feel proud to be an Australian when you see that sort of happening, you know?
Absolutely. All right, Damien, I think it's time for another song. And this is quite a long song. It goes for about 5 minutes. But it's probably my favourite song of all time. It's Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd doing Stairway to Heaven. And this is a version not many people have heard. You have a listen to this, it's stunning.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Gotcha Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt, and my guest, Damien. And, Damien, I think your pet project at the moment is getting the Hinkler Bridge going. First of all, give us a little bit of history about it.
The Hinkler Bridge. The Hinkler Bridge is it's the one piece of key infrastructure that we're putting forward. Everything else, we want to listen to people and get their ideas. But the one thing that I would like to see happen is this Hinkler Bridge, which links Burram Heads over to Buxton, linking Hervey Bay and Bundaberg together, providing an alternate tourist route for a lot of tourists. We get a lot of tourists up here, a lot of the grey nomads. But this is a bridge that has been, that's had the roads gazetted since 1886. So it's a bridge that's been talked about for over 100 years.
Oh, well, don't rush into it.
Now, I don't know if it's a Queensland thing or what. We don't, they don't seem to rush into things. But if this bridge is constructed, it will create, I believe, an instant dollars in the region. A lot of people, when they look at Hervey Bay when they're heading up north, they go into Maryborough. Maryborough gets the Bruce Highway traffic, but they look at Hervey Bay and they go, oh, you've got to go out, you've got to come all the way back out to go north. And so they sort of avoid the area. I mean, a lot of them do come here, don't get me wrong there, but we can get a lot more people in using it. It just opens up the regions. And this region we've got is a jewel. It really is a jewel in the crown. And we'd like to get people here, and it will stimulate everyone from I mean, grey nomads, a loaf of bread here, a litre of milk there, you get a lot of people coming, and we don't have that Sunshine Coast traffic, so the people that come up here generally stay for 3 to 4 days and have a good look around. So, I mean, every dollar that comes in here goes around and around, and I really, really would like to see, I'd like to be the person that makes this bridge happen.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Maybe you need to change the name of the bridge. I mean, Hinkler is a bit tough to say, you know. We can't even spell beer. We have to call it Forex. So.
Well, Hinkler is probably a no-brainer. You know, you've got Bundaberg has a lot of Hinkler heritage. The airport, which is actually ironically in the Isis Shire, but Hinkler Bridge is probably the most fitting name. Most fitting name for the bridge.
Yeah. I know.
But not only that, we saw a fatality the week before last, a couple of weeks ago now. And what happened was the Bruce High was effectively cut for a period of 7 hours.
I remember that.
And there's a lot of trucking companies and businesses, a lot of people that go back and forward between the two centres of Bundaberg and Hervey Bay. And they were cut. And the only other way, you've got to go right out and go back through Biggenden. Now, Biggenden isn't a set of roads. The roads out there don't, they're a lot of two or three one-lane bridges. Mm. They're not designed to carry the volume of traffic as a diversion if the Bruce Highway's closed. Now, this bridge, is as I said, the roads are gazetted. They're all through, it's through the National Park, actually. And it's the high ground in the National Park. So at the moment, if there's a flood or anything, the Burram people are stuck there. With this bridge, they'll be able to have access out of the place. It'll also, the road that actually runs through, that is gazetted, will pose a fire break. There was a fire a reasonable while ago now where they lost pretty much everything in the National Park, and all the animals were sitting on the water's edge on the Burram River.
Mm.
Mm.
So that would be good, yeah. Yeah, unintended consequences there, eh?
Absolutely, you know, but linking the two regions together, making us all part of one, and helping a lot of the other places that don't get a lot of tourist dollars, it'll bring people to us. And it won't just, like Southwise, it'll benefit Maryborough as well, right down to Tincan Bay, because you'll bring people in. Mm. You'll bring people in and off the road. A lot of those caravans, you know, they're sitting on 80, 90 kilometres an hour on the highway. A lot of the truck drivers have got deadlines to meet. And then you've got the 7,000 cars a day, estimate, pass through that Buxton Childers area a day. I mean, if we got 10% of that and two people in a car buying a pie and a Coke each, for example, at a bakery, so say $20 each they spend, over a year, that's about $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're actually doing at the moment, we have a petition into the state government, petitioning the state government for funding for a feasibility study.
Mm.
into the bridge, which we then can take to Infrastructure Australia to make application to have the bridge done.
Okay, now this brings up an interesting question, because I was thinking about this. You've obviously worked out how to get this going, but how are you going to get the funding?
Well, that's what we're petitioning the state government. So it's, we have a petition on the current parliament website at the moment. And it finishes on the 18th of June, and then it's due to be tabled the following week.
Okay, so what happens when that's tabled?
Well, my idea is that they will go, I'm hoping that they will go, yes, we'd like to see a feasibility study into this, and then we get that part of the ball rolling. Because everyone who's made their promises about it before have just said it, and either won their seats or disappeared, and nothing has ever happened. This is sat stagnant. Mm-hmm. So this morning I actually went out and I met up with Doug Waters. He's the he's leading the steering committee into the bridge. He's been fighting for it for about 20 years, and he's been at the helm for the last six to bring this bridge. And we went forward driving through the national park along the trail to see where the bridge is. I mean, it's roughly about a 40 metre long bridge from rock to rock. It's a self-spanning bridge, so really it's a no-brainer. It really is a no-brainer, and it'll cut time off the trip from Bundaberg to Hervey Bay, and just link the regions and bring people here.
You've been fighting 40 years for this.
Sorry?
You said you've been fighting 40 years for this.
20. He's been at this 20. For 20 years, but he's been at 6 years at the helm trying to get this. I have followed this story before, but I actually had the opportunity to meet Doug at the state election. Wow. And I sat down and spent a bit of time with him. We went over this and I said, wow, this is fantastic. And then we met a couple of times since, and we've gone over all the plans and we've had a look. He's provided me with the quotes, which I actually have in my shed. And I said, look, I can't work miracles, but this is the one piece of infrastructure I would like to see happen. And the petition that we have on the state government website is for all Queensland residents. That way we can get a lot more people in to sign it. So okay,
do you have the website address there handy, or can you email it to me and I'll put it up
I'd have to email it to you, because it's
it's the usual government one.
Yeah, it's got a lot of numbers and so forth to it. Yeah. At the moment, just looking at it, it was launched about 3 weeks ago. So we have 112 people that have actually signed the online version. Uh-huh. But we do have, we've got quite a few petitions in paper around the area, circulating around the area at the moment. But we're going to be doing a big push shortly, and I'm going to have, Pauline's going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally we're going to meet with a lot of the council representatives. And we want to see cooperation on as many levels as possible with as many people as possible, because this will benefit everyone. Like, I don't stand to gain a thing out of this except for the good feeling that I've actually got up and done something that I believe is right. But I really would like to see this happen. I think it's a benefit to all of us.
Excellent. Yeah, that's good. So I will put the link up on the radio show promo. I'll also put it up on my Facebook page, and let's see if we can't get more signatures for you.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, it will benefit. I mean, some people may only come here once in their lifetime, but it's to me, I'm happy to know, because I travel a lot between Bundaberg and Hervey Bay. My parents are up in Bargara, so if I can keep them off that Bruce Highway, I know that I don't really have to worry about them when they're driving down. But that Bruce Highway scares me, and I travel a lot. I'd spend a lot of time in Moranbah. I've only just finished working in Moranbah, and I really don't like the Bruce Highway. And if I can stay off it, I will stay off it.
Yeah, it's a scary place, but and the road is so bad in some areas, although they're working hard now to try and improve some parts of it. But, you know, I mean, it's a long road. They need much more funding to do a decent job.
Absolutely, and a lot of people just... they get impatient, you know. They get impatient, and a lot of people, you know, they don't think about what they're doing. But if we can just, like, well, that incident the other day, the fatality was a perfect example. But at the moment, it's only politicians that can make these decisions happen. And we're just not seeing, we just haven't seen enough support. It's just, it's upsetting that this has been going on for so long and absolutely nothing has happened about it.
Well, this is really Australia, mate. If you live up country, you don't really exist. That's the problem. Yeah, it's a shame.
What's it going to take for these people in power to start listening to us?
Oh, complete change. We need to change the whole government structure. This is what you and I are basically working towards. The people, from what I'm hearing around the country, and I get phone calls from people almost every day, complaining to me about the things that their local government is doing, what the federal government is doing to them. You wouldn't believe the number of people who call me up and tell me their problems. And, you know, it just sickens me that because I'm not elected and I have no power, I can't do anything for them. But I tell you what, it sure does put some gumption into my attempts because, you know, many of the time, and I'm sure you felt the same thing sometimes when you get into this politics business, it gets to you. It gets hard. You're getting attacked on all sides by people and, you know, sometimes you question your own motives and you think, am I doing the right thing here? And then you get these phone calls from people and you know you're doing the right thing.
That's exactly right. When I came out and announced that I'm running with One Nation, we had a lot of friends that sort of ostracised us and didn't have a lot of nice things to say to us because there was obviously a stereotype that goes along with it. And I sat there a few times. Like I get people sending me these volatile emails calling me racist and bigot. But I try to say to these people, look at the bigger picture. Look what's happened in the last 40 years where this duopoly of government that are simply self-serving, alternating people, they're never getting rewarded for doing a good job. They're simply put into power as a protest vote for the current party that's governing. Look at what they've done to you. They're selling us out. This is a party that believes, like yourself, that believes in the Australian people.
Yeah. But, you know, most people don't like change. And when you face them with the facts, they'd rather go into denial. I call them Egyptians, you know. But the fact is, and I find this too, when these people write these hateful emails to you, you can't waste your time on them because they're so bigoted and blind that you're going to waste your time. Now, to give you a case in point, I had some guy write to me after someone put one of our flyers into his letterbox about the halal scam. And he said, don't put this rubbish in my letterbox. It's no good for my kids. And I wrote him back an email, and instead of trying to educate him or anything, I made it into a bit of a light-hearted thing, and I said, well, in that case, you obviously support bringing in all the refugees, because he mentioned that as well. I said, you're in luck, because I work for an agency that settles refugees. And I said, I have this Afghani gentleman who's really desperate to find somewhere to live. But if you take him in, before you bring him into your home, please make sure that you get rid of all the sharp implements in your kitchen. Make sure your daughters and your wife are dressed in burqas. Put away all the chemicals in the house because he knows how to make bombs out of them. And I went on in that vein. Oh, the guy didn't have a sense of humor. He got really upset. But, you know, and then I decided, well, what's the point? You can't educate people like that. And you can't cure stupidity. So,
no, you can't.
No. So the best idea is to ignore them, get on with what you're doing, because at the end of the day, and I always remind my friends about this, we are right.
Yes.
Always remember that. We are right. What we are doing is for the good of the country. We're standing up there to bring in new ways of doing things that will benefit the country. And if we're successful, I can guarantee you in years to come, people will be coming to us and thanking us. But at the moment, it's a very thankless job, but we are right. So
It is a very thankless job. I'm afforded 38 hours a weekend at home, and I've got to fit everything into that 38 hours that I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, this campaign really takes it out of me, takes a lot out of the family. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I do believe what I'm doing is the right right decision.
Well, that's it. We're doing this for the right reasons, and for that reason alone, I think we will be successful, because now people have woken up. They're supporting us more and more. I mean, when I started out in this about 5 years ago, I was a lone voice in the wilderness, you know? And now today, a lot of people are coming on and saying, yeah, this is what we need. This is why, you know, we've had enough. So keep up the good work, Damien, and thank you very much for coming on the show today.
I really appreciate it.
This is the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt, signing off. Until next time, here's a message to Islam. You can try to deny us our freedoms and our rights. You can try to impose your idiotic ideology on us, but you never will, because we believe in freedom, and we will fight you to your death.